You're listening to the European Tour Race to Dubai show with Dan Roebuck and Robert Lee.
Hello and welcome to the Race to Dubai show as a fine finish from Justin Harding sees the South African hold off nine players for a maiden European Tour victory at the Commercial Bank Qatar Masters.
I'm happy to have got over the line eventually. I've obviously been knocking on the door for a little bit now recently, and it's rewarding obviously seeing the hard graft and the change in mindsets and everything involved in what's going on. And yeah, I'm happy. Yeah? I've got a bit of the shakes now. I'm shaking more than I was on the golf course earlier.
And there was also a dramatic conclusion to the Arnold Palmer Invitational, where Open and Race 2 Dubai champion Francesco Molinari stormed to a sensational win.
Super happy the way I did it today. You know, I tried to be aggressive from the start, and it was nice to see quite a lot of putts dropping, especially for my standards. So I think it's been the best putting round ever in my career, and it's nice to do it, you know, obviously in those circumstances, Arnie's place.
We'll hear from Justin Harding and Molinari, McIlroy, and many more as we look back at both tournaments. Plus, there's also a look ahead to the magical Kenya Open presented by ABSA. Hello, I'm Dan Roebuck, and I'm joined by two-time European Tour winner Robert Lee and golf writer Matt Cooper. Rob, how are you?
Good, thank you. How are you, more to the point?
I'm very well.
I do worry about you.
I worry about you because we don't see each other that often. That's right. Usually in airports these days.
And then we clash, leave and come back and clash a month later.
Yes, we do.
That's
indeed.
It.
Indeed. Matt, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Excellent stuff. We're going to look back at the Qatar Masters first of all. Justin Harding, birdieing three of his last four holes to claim a first European Tour win, Rob, but he'd been a prolific winner on the Sunshine Tour and an Asian Tour over the course of the last year or so. So was it that much of a surprise? Because he was up against a number of European Tour players who'd got themselves in the mix on a number of occasions but hadn't won. This guy was a serial winner.
Yeah, I think that obviously works. You know, wherever you play in the world, if you win, it doesn't matter if you're on the Alps Tour, the Hooters Tour, the Challenge Tour. It doesn't matter where you win, it counts. It sinks in there somewhere. And because he'd been on a good run through the summer, not only in Asia, but in South Africa, when he got there with a chance and a sniff, and let's face it, he finished quite a bit ahead of the final groups. He had to post a score, and he was the only person, when you look at all the contenders on a very tight, packed leaderboard, that played the last three or four holes any good at all. He played them in three under par, and that's really what got him over the line.
A little bit under the radar, I guess, for regular European Tour watchers, Matt, but this is a guy, as we mentioned, that has been playing well, and he'd been playing well on the European Tour as well when we'd seen him over the course of 2019.
Yeah, he had a really good start to the season. The only strange thing was he missed the cut in Oman, and that was his worst result of the season. And it might almost be the case that his expectations were slightly lowered. He was probably expecting quite a lot of himself at that point. Goes and misses the cut in Oman. It just gives him that kick on the next week. I tell you what I also enjoyed, that both last week and the week before, the importance of wind in a golf tournament. Not only were the players who weren't used to winning in the final round, but a little bit of wind just added a bit of excitement. And I think it's one of the perfect things for a fluctuating final round.
You say you missed the cut in Oman, where it was very windy. Windy again in Qatar. Did he learn something from the previous week? Did he benefit from not playing the weekend when it was pretty wild in Oman? How do you see that?
I think that's a distinct possibility. But it's also, it's quite a common thing that players can play very, very well and their expectations get really high. And sometimes they'll have a missed cut. And that is actually not a disastrous thing because it just, there's nothing more damaging for a golfer. Even when you're a very poor standard golfer like me, if you go into a round thinking, oh, I'm playing really well at the moment, that's actually when you actually play quite badly. When you're sort of levelled off, you're in quite a good spot.
You know what we need to find out? Because it was so windy in Oman, there was sand blowing right across the golf course, a lot of sand in the air. We have to find out if he wears contact lenses. Because when you wear contact lenses, you're not going to go and play in glasses. But if it's dusty and sandy and grainy...
Well, it was a bit dusty in Qatar as well,
it's
wasn't
dusty,
it?
Not it's dusty, much. But it was like sand blowing about. And there's a fine dust that's always in the air in Qatar. In the end, when you come back to the hotel, you're kind of covered in it. And it's, you know, any car that you've got out in the outside air, you'll see it's completely covered in this really fine clay dust. It's not really sand because it's weird in Qatar. When it rains there, it turns into the sand that you normally think of at home. If it rains, the water just seeps through it. There it turns into almost like clay, like a pottery clay.
Another little thing I've got to think about after this tournament, if you look at the people who've won this tournament down the years, you've got Stenson, Laurie, Els, who did win the Open, Sergio Garcia, Thomas Bjorn, Adam Scott should have won the Open. Chris Wood, Eddie Pepperell, Brandon Grace, they've done very well in the Open. Last few years, Eddie Pepperell won here, went on and played very well at the Open. Beef, 2 years ago, fourth in Qatar.
Eddie Pepperell won the British Masters. It was windy
yeah,
there.
Yeah. Rafa Cabrera-Bello did well in both.
So are we saying this is the correlation between the Qatar Masters and the Open Championship?
Well, who would think that a golf course in the middle of the desert would have anything to do with a golf course by the British seaside? But I think that wind
Not
thing,
many of us.
But there's something about the wind. And I've chatted to a couple of people. I've chatted to Paul Laurie about it, Chris Wood, and they have said, you need to be striking the ball well through the wind, low trajectory. There's something about the two that link.
Just wait 1 second while I check Justin Harding's odds for the Open Championship. Will you lay me about 500-1, Rob, would you?
No, I don't want to lay you anything at all, but I'm sure you'll come up with the odds. Normally within 1 or 2 points you can get there just off the top of your head.
Do you know?
Not that
Matt
you bet.
Might know.
I don't know, but what I did notice is Erik van Rooyen did very well this week, and he did very well at Carnoustie last year.
And he did well at the Irish Open.
Yeah.
There we go. We've got it nailed down. At the start of the round, he was in contention-ish, wasn't he, Justin Harding? And he managed to birdie, what, three of his first four holes. Then he had back-to-back bogeys. At that stage, because there were so many players in the mix, I wonder if he thought, I've got nothing to lose here, and he didn't have the nerves maybe that he might have done if he'd continued on that playing.
There is a difference between going out in the lead and coming from the pack, as it were. There's a big difference. Win's a win, that's true. But when you take on the pressure of the whole field and you're leading in the final round and you stay out in front and you pick up the trophy, that's a different type of win to having it all come together like Francesco Molinari did. He came through the pack, posted a number, no one could get there. And that's what Justin Harding did. Still a great win, but it's not the same pressure.
He finished his round, what, 45 minutes an hour before the last pairing came in. I mean, he was on the range, but I think as the afternoon wore on, it almost seemed pretty obvious to me that he was going to win, because every single player that looked like they might challenge, might pick up shots on the holes that they should pick up shots on, just failed to do so.
I thought there was a real sense that all those guys that were at the top in that sort of log jam, they were all sort of focused on each other and actually trying to beat Choi, who set the first benchmark. And actually, it was only Justin Harding who actually broke through that sort of level. The strange thing is that both Molinari and Harding, they're very similar wins.
You won't, yeah, because they post a number and no one can get there.
But also, they'd had a lot of wins in the last year. So they'd had that confidence. Once they're on a roll, they weren't scared to stay on that roll, set the number, sit back 45 minutes and wait to see what anyone else could do.
I mean, we see a lot of players on the European Tour that seem to have very good careers but don't win or don't win that often. And when you look at those players just off the pace, the likes of Nacho Elvira, yet to win on the European Tour, who got to 12 under and then immediately bogeyed and then couldn't find the right shots on the holes that he should have done, 16 in particular, where he made a right mess of it. The likes of Jorge Campillo, every single week you think, it's got to be his time, it's got to be his week, because he's in such a good, consistent vein of form. But for whatever reason, they can't get over the line.
It's winning's difficult. It doesn't matter. Like I say, winning counts wherever you win, and winning is difficult. You can never give a victory away. You can never say, oh, if you just do this, if you just do that, you'll win. It's not like that. Often you've got so many different factors happening in a final round, with so many different things happening to every single competitor that's in the chase. For you to be the one that gets over the line, that's one thing. For you to be able to do it consistently, that's a very rare thing. But, you know, you do get players that win trying not to lose, and you do get players that win trying to win.
Oliver Wilson came into the final round a shot clear. I mean, he won the Alfred Dunn. It would have been a great story if he'd have come back to win on the European Tour again, because he won on the Challenge Tour.
But he said, in fairness to himself, he said in the third round, he was, even his on-course interview, he wasn't driving it well. I need to find some more fairways. And we saw in the final round, well, I saw, you know, when you're trying to knock off a bit of turf to hit your driver off the deck just to keep it in play, for him to finish second, I look at that in the opposite way for him.
And why,
I think it's a great second place.
Why was he doing that and not teeing it up?
Because when you're not sure where it's going, the last thing you want to feel is that the ball's teed up and you're giving it a big free hit. You want to try and trap it and squeeze it down and narrow down your sort of hitting area. And that's why he was hitting it off the deck, because he knew he couldn't hit a real wide. He was giving up 30 yards, but he knew he wouldn't hit it off the planet.
Is that a real tell then, do you think, of someone who's just not comfortable?
I think the fact he finished second with that handicap off the tee box is going to stand him in good stead. I think it's a great thing that he did.
There's going to be players kicking themselves that they didn't get beyond Harding's score here, aren't they? They had a lot of the last round. They had the back nine. He was in and out before a number of them. They had those chances on 16 and 18 where you think they've got to pick up shots. Over the previous three rounds, that's where shots were being picked up left, right and centre.
Rob, what does somebody like...
You just ignored him, though.
Sorry, yeah. Well,
that's fine. I'm used to it with him.
You're in the room.
I'm taking his point and I'm taking you. Somebody like George Campea, what has he got to do from, like, so many top 20s? What does he do to change being so close to being a winner?
Do you know what he's got to do? He's got to not panic and he's got to figure out that eventually it'll be his turn. I mean, remember Tom Watson when he first came out? How many times did he blow? David Duval, how many times did they blow? Eventually they get it over the line and then they turn into... I mean, Tom Watson had a phenomenal career, we know that, but I think that's going to happen to Jorge Campillo. I think once he gets that win, he'll realise that it's very doable because he's had plenty of positions where he can get this done. And it's only, I do honestly believe for him it's a matter of time.
Oliver Wilson is an interesting one. His first 165 starts on the European Tour, 26 top tens. His last 139 starts, he's had five.
Yeah.
And the amazing thing with him, he won all those millions of pounds, played for the European Ryder Cup team, didn't have a win in those glory years. His win has come in that sort of fallow period.
Yeah, he won incredibly well against a really good field at the Dunhill Links. And no one would have picked that. And he won it in style, by the way, on a tough final day, beating Rory and the rest of the players that were right up there. And you would have said, with the form that he had in the Challenge Tour coming into that event, there's absolutely no chance that he could win that. And yet he pulled off a miracle. And then you would have thought, right, now he's got it. He's actually got it. I think I'm pretty sure he was seeing Robert Rock at the time. And the swing was working well. It all came together. This is our way forward. And then he spent the next 12 months trying to mess with the swing. He's a tinkerer, Ollie Wilson. He never feels like he's ready. He's always got to do something else to get it done or something else to get it done. He's actually a really good player.
Final round of 71. He said on Twitter, just didn't have it this weekend, unfortunately, but delighted to grind out a second place and more progress. Pot on the last makes it all feel a little better. Thanks for all the Twitter love. Much appreciated, people. He is a much liked player, isn't he, I think?
Ollie Wilson?
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I think he's had a good career. He could have had a great career, and there's still time for him. If he can just get all the guff out of his head and simplify things, just go play.
A lot of love for Justin Harding, obviously. Jack Kruijswijk said, huge congrats, Justin Harding, on the Qatar Masters win. Well-deserved victory. And Matt Wallace, who was obviously playing in the States at the time, said, well done, Justin Harding. Great rise in golf last couple of years. Global winner. I guess we can see the similarities between Matt Wallace and Justin Harding. We mentioned it earlier.
Yeah, because of the wins that Matt had in the Alps Tour, and then he broke onto the European Tour and had all those wins last year. And now, you know, he was in contention at Bay Hill. Matt Wallace looked very comfortable there as well. I think Matt Wallace is one of those players that actually does go all out for the win. He plays for the W, Dan.
Indeed. As did Harding, who we can hear from right now. And he told us how it felt to be crowned Qatar Masters champion.
Fantastic. Lovely. Still settling in. I didn't quite think it was enough, certainly, to win. I thought there was going to be a playoff. But I'm happy to have got over the line eventually. Obviously been knocking on the door for a little bit now recently. And it's rewarding, obviously, seeing the hard graft and the change in mindsets and everything involved in what's going on. And, yeah, I'm happy. I've got a bit of the shakes now. I'm shaking more than I was on the golf course earlier. I got off to a good start, made a couple birdies, and then lost my head for about three or four holes around the turn. And then my caddy, Alan, kind of said, right, we're still in it. See if we can make a couple on the back, and anything might happen. So I managed to keep myself in it, make a couple, and have a good finish, birdie 17 and 18, which was huge. As I said, I didn't think 13 was going to be clear. I thought it would probably sneak a playoff, especially based on the way the scores were looking on the back nine. But yeah, I'm happy to have got over the line.
Birdieing the final two to win a first European Tour event. Some finish from him as well, especially after that wobble on 6 and 7 during the early stages of his round. How far can he go, do you think, Justin Harding? Because he has been around. He's not a youngster coming onto the tour, is he?
You know, they're all talking about birdieing the last two holes. He birdied 15, and that's a horrible, horrible par 4. If you're in the hunt and you're going to foul up in the last four holes, that's the hole that's going to happen to you on 15. Turns that into a birdie and then closes out with two. I think a great win for him. The first win is always very important, but you know what's important? The second win. So let's see how Justin goes now. He played on a golf course that was breezy, yes, but grainy greens. There were consistencies with what he's used to in South Africa, when he gets back onto the bent greens of mainland Europe, let's see how he gets on. But what a week for him, and to break through like that, he must be absolutely thrilled. Well, we heard he was.
We do see a lot of South Africans play well in those type of events, and obviously on the Sunshine Tour and co-sanctions events in Africa. When they do come to Europe, it is a bit of a step up, isn't it? It's different for them.
It is, and I think another factor that we don't often take into account is now he's a winner, he's going to get different tee times. He's going to be playing with bigger, better names. He has to start to cope with that. His whole lifestyle on the tour is going to be very different. Those sort of things impact on a player quite a lot.
And he only just snuck into this event anyway.
Yeah, yes. So I mean, he's
gone. What was his category again?
His category was a very strange one. He was top three on the Asian tour last year. That gets him into a small amount of events. Now he's got lots of events. So again, his what he was expecting to do this year
his
has changed completely.
His diary's completely different.
Yeah,
yeah. And he can pick and choose as well, which you know what that's like. Dan, you like to pick and choose.
Obviously, yes. Well, I take anything that comes my way. You know that. We were talking, or you guys were talking about his change of putting routine or putter full stop. What's the story there?
Well, he's got the big broomstick, which...
And he didn't have that before?
It's fairly recent. It's fairly recent. He hasn't used it all his days. And this improvement over the last 12 months or so has definitely coincided with his use of the long stick. So... You're not allowed to anchor. There's been a lot of chat about Bernard Langer, you know, because the knuckle or the thumb is very close to his chest. As long as it doesn't touch your chest, it's legal. If it touches your chest, that's anchored to a pivot. That's what was outlawed. But so what he does is perfectly legal, and he's obviously putting very well.
I mean,
well
if you find a way, you're not going to change it, are you?
Well, you wouldn't have thought he's going to go to his old style at this point, because 5 wins in... What is it, 9 months is an extraordinary number of wins to sort of reap.
Speaking of extraordinary, he's 52 in the world.
That's a great... I mean, that's you wouldn't have said that even with the win that he would be 52nd in the world. So now he's...
I'm not quite sure what he actually came from to get to 52.
How big the jump was?
He was 64, I'm being told. I mean, if I'd have told you Justin Hone was 64 in the world last week, you'd have said... Well, you might not have said who, but a lot of people would have said
who. But that's the value of winning around the world, where fields are weaker. You can start to garner quite a lot of world ranking points. That's the value of it. We've seen on several occasions where players have just played the Challenge Tour and all of a sudden they're in the world's top 100 just playing Challenge Tour events. You can work your way up the world rankings outside the main tours. But once you get to where he is now... 50th, thereabouts, that's when your world really does start to open up. If he can have another good performance between now and perhaps Augusta at the start of April, he can get to play the Velvet Green at Augusta National.
Apparently he's given up something that you would never give up, Robin, that's social drinking.
Well, I haven't got any friends. So
it's not social drinking, it's lonely drinking.
No, it's just there's no point in having a drink because I'm just friendless, really. Mm. So a very different social circle to yourself. All the red carpets and stuff that you go on. You've got so many suits.
They're not red when
You've
I finish
so many
with
suits
them.
At home. It's unbelievable.
Suit shoes, sir.
All cut far too narrow, if you might remember me saying. Too very close to the shoe and the ankle. But nonetheless, I think he's had a sort of a lifestyle wake-up for Justin Harding, and I think he's probably realised that there are too many people now having salad leaves and mineral water with bubbles in.
The thing is with this, Matt, whenever someone wins and has done this, it's like, oh, yes, well, he's changed his lifestyle. But there are hundreds of golfers who probably change it and they don't win.
It's one of the big questions I always ask myself. Another similar one is...
I have that one more glass?
The question is, I shouldn't have had that last one.
But another great one with that is the number of times a player will win with a new caddy.
Yeah.
And everybody's like, oh, that's the key. If we can find that information out at the start of the week, we're on to a winner. But you don't take into account all the guys who've had new caddies and haven't done
absolutely
very well.
Same with new clubs, Molinari.
The caddy thing, yes.
People say new clubs can't win this week.
But what normally happens is the caddy leaves his player for a week because his player's pulled out and he then goes to work for someone else. Mm. And that caddy brings the win with him. It's the other way around. And then he goes back to his normal bag. It's really strange the way that happens. It's so, so common. The caddy leaves his normal bag just for a week
and then moves on and
brings the win with him.
I'm not having it.
The caddy brings stuff with him.
It's the ones that we hear about.
It happens too often.
It's the ones we hear about.
I think it is the ones we hear about, but having a new coach and a new caddy around, I think it can have a beneficial effect because you're putting new ideas into your head. that just stops you having the damaging thoughts you often have. And I'm with Dan in the sense that if we knew all the people who've got the new caddies, we'd get lost in a fog of too much information. But for those individuals, it can have a beneficial effect.
That's because you boys are too concentrated on the stats, you know, the nuts and bolts
we've,
of it.
Really, not got anything
I'm
else
sort of going
anyway.
With the emotion of the thing. Yeah, if you look
you've
at every caddy change,
the emotion out of it, Joe.
Yes, yeah, I know you do.
That's what you've got to try.
That's why
and
you're
do.
Such a success with your betting account.
A couple of other points of order. South Korea's Jin Ho Choi shot a final round 8 under par 64 to also finish tied for second. And a word on Christian Bezuidenhout, who was one of three South Africans to finish in second spot. The focus of the player blog on the European Tour website. I mean, this is an incredible story, isn't it, Matt? As a child, mistakenly drank rat poison, had to have his stomach pumped, affected his nervous system. I mean, the story goes on, doesn't it?
It was remarkable. As a consequence of that mistake that he made, he suffered from anxiety, depression. Golf became sort of the rescue for him. Very, very good amateur player. Found himself playing and having to take beta blockers to address his depression and anxiety. Then was playing the amateur championship at Royal Port Rush and discovered that he'd been flagged up in a drug test. Basically, that it then became like a very sort of sad story. Lots of allegations flying around that he was actually using it for performance enhancing. And obviously, that was banned for a while. I mean, we were saying earlier, he's desperate to get to Port Rush this year. And if he does get there, that return is going to be very emotional for him. But it's also another case that so many people, if they are at Port Rush, are going to have like incredible stories.
Good performance from the South African, someone you've spoke to over the years, Rob.
Christian, yeah, I interviewed him last year and he's got a stammer, and that's obviously from what happened to him as a child. But God bless him. He had a really good round. He wanted to do the interview. And do you know what? He absolutely got it done. He got it done in his own time, and he was a credit to his family and the way he's been brought up, because it was really gutsy to go in front of the camera and knowing that he can't really get it across in the time that he wants to do it. Given the time, he can still communicate. So well done, Christian. Yeah, excellent performance.
Yeah, good play this week, no doubt about that. Good play sporadically from Nick Cullen, who was mic'd up along with his caddy during the second round. Did we learn anything from this? Was it a worthwhile experience? How much did you eavesdrop on this one, chaps?
I think eventually everyone's going to be mic'd up. There are going to be 156 players mic'd up, and you're just going to hear the twaddle that goes on between player and caddy. I mean, I think viewers should have a choice. You can watch the sanitized version that goes out that we see now,
yeah,
or
the
you get the unexpurgated version,
the
on the red button by subscription version, where it's warts and all. I want to see warts and hear warts and all.
Well, come on,
and if
come
they
on,
swear
player,
at each other and get upset with each other, I want to hear that.
As a player, what would warts and all sound like without the profanities?
Well, obviously, just what you just said. Like, I can't, there's nowhere for me to go with that sentence, is there? Where can I go with it?
Well, you can. Well, your old caddy.
Edinburgh Jimmy. Here, yes.
Give us some sort of idea if you were mic'd up, when you were missing
like
the cup,
when you tell a story,
what would happen?
When you tell a story that involves swearing, if you don't tell it with the swearing in it, there's no point starting off in the first place. And that would be my conversations with Edinburgh Jimmy.
Okay.
It would be blue language all over the place, okay. Profanities everywhere, okay. Swearing at each other, calling each other names, and, you know, incredibly childish, but in the heat of the moment...
Would it be worth listening to?
It'd be very much worth listening to, very much worth listening to.
Well, Matt, was this worth listening? I mean, I found it interesting to a point because they were talking about, you know, club selection and yardages, but I would imagine that if I had that every single week, it'd sound the same every week.
I like Rob's idea because I'm slightly underwhelmed by the whole notion of overhearing the players and the caddies. It's one of those things that I've always wanted to do it, and then every time I've heard it, it's not as exciting as I thought it was.
Which players do we think might be quite interesting to listen to?
Well, I think if we had Tyrrell Hatton for an entire round, that could be interesting, and it would actually be better if he was playing badly at the time.
Mm. Thomas Bjorn.
Because he may well explode and get a bit.
Yeah.
Thomas Bjorn, Ryder Cup captain. I mean, the microphones, you don't need to mic him up. The microphones are perfectly capable of catching what he says. Apologise on his behalf many times.
It has been done a few times in the past. We heard Tiger and Phil, of course, with a shootout. And I think Greg Norman was involved in something a few years ago.
Greg Norman was once walking off the tee with Colin Montgomery. And As he walked off the tee, he asked Monty where he'd been the previous week. Monty replied, Singapore. And Greg asked what he thought of it, and Monty said, very clean.
Yes, and clean, yes.
And
yes.
Greg Norman said, yeah, that's when dictatorships work.
Well, it could be interesting going forward, couldn't it, with certain players? There's no doubt about that. Do you think it's going to happen? Are we saying it's going to happen? Did you say it's going
to
happen?
I think if you want to do it, let's do it. Otherwise, the tittle-tattle, banal rubbish that you might hear would not be interesting. I want to be entertained.
Second hole in one of the season for Australian Dayan Lawson, incidentally. Last point of order on this. Followed up his ace at the Alfred Dunhill Championship with another at the par 3 17th on Friday. He won a BMW for his effort in South Africa. Nothing in Qatar.
Stately
How's
home.
Your luck?
He won the stately
he
home in
nothing.
Qatar. That's right.
Absolutely nothing.
Second word, hall.
What about the top 10 from the Commercial Bank Qatar Masters?
The top 10. Well, actually, it's the top two. Very bizarre week, this. Justin Harding, we know he won by 2 shots at 13 under par. Tied for second at minus 11 were 9 players. Christian Bezuidenhout, Jorge Campillo, Choi, Coetzee, Elvira, Carlsen, Lorenzo Vera, Van Rooyen and Oliver Wilson. Quite a cast.
Now, reminder of last week's selections. 2 picks from the boys last week and a further reminder of how it's done. One has to be outside of the top 50 in the final 2018 Race 2 Dubai standings. 20 points for a winner, 10 for a top 5, 5 for a top 20, minus 5 for a miscut. Rob Lee, you went for Jorge Campillo, who was second. You get 10 points for that. Well done, Rob.
Thank you.
And also Nicholas Kolsarts, who was 27th. So nothing for that. So 10 points. Paul Eales went for Thomas Peters, who missed the cut. He was the favourite as well. Shocker from Thomas.
So minus 5 for Eales. Keep going.
Gavin Green. Who
MC?
was tied 31st.
Okay, so he's minus 5.
Minus 5, yeah. Kit Alexander, who was our guest last week, went for
Sitting in
Matt's seat, no pressure, Matt. Went for Justin Harding.
Winner,
20 points. And also Victor Dubuisson, who withdrew. Do we know why he withdrew? Injury. He's had a shocking time, hasn't he, over the last, 18 months?
Victor's a really interesting character, an amazing player with so much talent. He just needs to get himself in a place where he wants to play. He really wants to play, as opposed to going tuna fishing. Playing makes you much more money than tuna fishing.
It's a shame because he'd shown signs of form, hadn't he?
Yeah. He made a nice little start to the season.
But
I actually went searching to find out why he'd withdrawn and couldn't find out why. One of the great things about Victor Dubuisson is if you ever get to chat to the French journalist about him, they have some fantastic grouse. I have stood and watched the standoff between Victor and the French journalists, and it's like a sort of modern-day Western.
Thomas Peters, his form recently. Matt, what's your thoughts? I always ask Rob about it.
That's his worst result for quite some time. He's been really churning out the sort of top 30s.
But top 30s without challenging?
Exactly, and it's getting a big mystery with him now. I mean, when he did so well in the Ryder Cup, he was that classic case of always going to move on to much bigger and better things, and it's just not happened.
Yeah, he did effectively what Tommy Fleetwood did. He got 4 points as a rookie, which is extraordinary.
Fantasy Race 2 Dubai game. Stephen Swan tops the global leaderboard, while Richard Cowgill scored the most points from the Qatar Masters. If you want to get involved, you can by heading to europeantour.com and registering your team. How's your team doing, Rob? Are you just looking? Or are you checking your shares?
Well, I'm just going to look at it. No, I haven't got any shares.
Bus times?
If HMRC are listening, I've got no shares whatsoever. None.
What, is this bus time from Stockley to Heathrow?
No, I'm looking at normally, when we used to run our little mini league for ourselves, when Matt, through the glass there, used to be bothered to do it. It was really good fun, so you could see where you were. And you had your printout every week. Now, I've got to go back into it, which I am doing as we're chatting away.
Matt, do you do the fantasy?
Yes, and I've had quite a nice record the last 2 years, and I'm struggling this year. Yeah. I'm about 1,500.
I'm way off the pace. I forgot the first 2 weeks, so that's my excuse.
It's just loading. Web page, it says. Yeah. Log in, then it'll flick past it, and then it'll give me the score.
You cleared history recently?
No. Let's just have a look where
might
I am.
Might be something to consider.
It doesn't say. Where does it give you your position? Private league, head to head, my team.
Yeah.
Overall standings. 535th overall.
It's not bad. It's not bad, but it's not winning, is
5-3-5.
It?
5-3-5. But that would be doing quite well if Matt could be bothered to get our mini league going.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Maybe we should start one from the Masters.
Well, we can sort of start one, and you've scored what you've scored.
Yeah, but have the mini league start. No, you start again.
Why you
from naught?
Have you had a bad start?
Yeah, well, I missed the first 2 weeks. Anyway,
Statman Dan.
Yeah, top 10 race to Dubai standings.
I have that for
Lee.
You. I have that for you. It is Shane Lowry in number one position, having only played 3 tournaments. But of course, he did win a very large event just recently. Ian Poulter second, Richard Sterney third, Kurt Kitayama fourth, Justin Harding up to fifth, Bryson DeChambeau sixth, Louis Oosthuizen seventh, David Lipsky eighth, Joost Luyten ninth, and Matt Wallace brings out the top 10.
In other news, Francesco Molinari shot a sensational final round, 8-under-par 64 to secure a two-shot victory at the Arnold Palmer Invitational at Bay Hill. The Race 2 Dubai and Open champion started the day 5 shots off the lead, but 8 birdies, including a monster 44-foot putt on the last, saw him storm through the pack and top the leaderboard. Let's hear from the Italian, who is delighted with his victory.
Yeah, obviously, super happy the way I did it today. You know, I tried to be aggressive from the start, and it was nice to see quite a lot of putts dropping, especially for my standards. So I think it's been the best putting round ever in my career. And it's nice to do it, you know, obviously, in those circumstances, Arnie's place. Yeah, just try to stay aggressive until the end. And then, obviously, 18, that flag kind of tempts you in, but my caddy was smart to tell me, you know, to go a little left and just give myself a long putt. And I don't know, there must be something going on with that line, because it seems that a lot of guys winning the tournament made that putt. But I'll proudly say I was the first to make it with the flag in.
Incredible performance from Molinari. And when he says he's had his best putting round ever, considering what he did last year, I mean, that's unbelievable.
It's fantastic. I think he had a new putter this week.
They have new clubs.
He's got new Callaway clubs, yep. New Callaway ball, new Odyssey putter. It's a dream start for him, really, to come out so quickly with a new kit. Lots of people think, why'd you change your kit? There's always a bit of Bula involved.
He wasn't signed with anyone previously, was he?
No, he was in a position where, because he was a Nike player, he could use what he wanted. But he did say that, actually, you think it's great having the choice of anything, but in the end it becomes quite confusing, because you can get away from one group of people looking after you and eventually fine-tuning what you've got to. It's too wide. The gamut is too wide, and you can't really get what you want. And he said since he's gone to Team Callaway, they've made it all happen for him, so he must be thrilled.
There was a very clear demonstration about what the wider public thought about the news that he'd gone to Callaway, which was that punters were steering clear of him at the start of last week.
Yeah, me included.
His price went enormous. And for a few people,
perception, isn't it, that, oh, new clubs, changed clubs, can't possibly win?
Jack Nicklaus used to win with 3 or 4 different sets of clubs a year because he had different contracts. In Australia, he played with Slazengers, he played with McGregor's in America. Wherever he went, he had to play with a different set of clubs. So, in a way, that kind of blows the club myth out the door from the greatest player that's ever lived.
Is he a better... I say better player. Is he going to have the same type of year, do you think, this year? I mean, it's so difficult to follow it up, and I think the perception was you get to be Open champion and, you know, you win the Race to Dubai. You know, what do you do for an encore here?
Well, I tell you, one person who's forgotten what he did last year was Paul Azinger, because I think he got caught on television saying that last night might have been the highlight of his career.
What?
Somewhat overlooking a little claret
jug. Talk about small world view. That's unbelievable. He couldn't have said that.
He said something along those lines. Yeah, it was like a big thing over Twitter that, little photographs of Francesco holding the claret jug, just a little reminder. But what fascinates me with Francesco is there were a lot of changes he made for about 2 years running up to Wentworth last year. But one of the big things that happened a fortnight before Wentworth last May was the Players' Championship, which obviously is this week. And Francesco went there off a good result at Quail Hollow. And I had a big chat with him at the end of last year, and he said, I was so confident, I was actually cocky on the driving range that week. He chatted to Dennis Pugh. Dennis Pugh was saying, what do you want to do? Dennis Pugh thought he saw a problem in his swing. Francesco said, no, I'm fine, I'm okay. And then he bombed. He missed the cut. He'd had 3 top tens in a row at Sawgrass before that. And he went away furious with himself, because he'd got cocky. And for the rest of that summer, through the win at Wentworth, through the win on the PGA and the Open and the Ryder Cup, every time they left the driving range, Molinari would look at Pugh and they'd remember that moment, the cockiness.
Sounds like a good mental trigger for him.
See, some people, though, cocky suits them. I mean, you want Ian Poulter cocky. Mm. You want him turning up things, strutting around the range, on the bee's knees. That's how you want him. That's how he plays his best. And for Francesco, that's not a natural fit with his personality type. He's Mr. Steady Eddie, a flatliner. He doesn't get two up and two down, and he's just super consistent because of it.
But his game's changed a little. I mean, he's probably got 30 yards more off the tee, hasn't he now?
I wouldn't say 30 yards, but he's certainly gained yardage. I mean, probably the way you measure, Dan, you might think it's 30 yards. I mean, can I just say 30 yards for you, extra yardage, is achievable. Mm. It's definitely achievable. You go from 150 to 180 quite easily. But yeah, no, Francesco is a person that believes every year that he can improve. And he's not looking for quantum leaps of improvement every year. It's little incremental improvements. And when you add all that up, you get the package that he is now.
It's putting where he's got better, isn't it? Because a few years ago, he got himself into contention so often, putting let him down.
Yeah, I mean, he's actually probably the sort of person that we were talking about Campillo earlier. Mm. He should probably be looking at somebody like Molinari, because Molinari was doing what Campillo was doing sort of 3-4 years ago. And he's done enough. Another thing that he said to me was that sort of 2 years ago, he recognised that he wasn't winning as often as he did. And he went to Dave Allred, who worked a lot with Johnny Wilkinson. And a lot of stuff that they do is all his practice puts him in a very difficult situation. So he's never, ever comfortable. And then when he gets on the golf course, actually that becomes like his easy place almost.
I bumped into the two of them, really oddly enough, at Wisley just before he went to America. And Francesco was there working away with Dave. He'd just been practicing. They were having a bit of lunch, then they were going to go out and do some more. So it's not like I'm spending half an hour with my therapist and then I've got the rest of the day off. It's full on all day long between the two of them. And Dave already has had a remarkable effect on him. They're going. Team Molinari is going along very nicely. Thank you very much.
Just one more stat for you, or a group of stats. Bogey-free streaks to finish in Francesco Molinari's last four worldwide wins. The 2018 BMW PGA, last 44, didn't drop a shot. In the Quicken Loans last year, last 28 holes. In the Open, last 37. And yesterday, in the Arnold Palmer Invitational, didn't drop a shot over the last 38. Mr. Consistent. We can get the
you
thoughts.
You see that there's room for improvement there.
Yeah, there is.
You know what I'm saying?
You got 29, yeah. 31. We can now get the thoughts of overnight leader Matthew Fitzpatrick, who eventually had to settle for second place on 10 under.
I did feel like I should have won the way I played. So obviously I am disappointed. I lost by two, and I can sort of think of two things today where could have hit a couple of better shots maybe. And overall, I just think today just a little disappointing. I was probably played too safe. You know, I think sort of protecting my position a little bit. You know, it's fine. I'm delighted with solo second. But I just felt like the way I played and where I was hitting it, I could have been a little bit more aggressive.
I think it was the eagle putt that slipped by. Was it 16?
Two good shots into the par five.
If he gets that,
it was a par four for those lads. It's not a par five.
If he gets that, he's one behind with two to play. No, I don't think anyone birdied 17, did they yesterday?
The whole day, I think it was. No, there was a birdie.
There was one.
Somebody made it from right across the green, and I'm trying to think who it was in the coverage last night, and I can't.
To know
Charles Howell the third. Somebody made it from right across the green anyway. You couldn't, it was 220 yards, and where the pin was cut, the green had no depth. You just couldn't fly it over the bunker in the water and hold it on the green. It was impossible.
Molinari posted that score and obviously was in the clubhouse long before anybody else. And
they've still got 9 hours to play.
I know, but a little bit like Qatar, obviously very different in terms of quality, but no one was making the putts that they had to put any sort of pressure to try and get to that score. And then when Fitz dropped a shot on the back nine, I can't remember which hole it was, there was just no opportunity for anyone to get to Molinari's score. For me, it was done and dusted quite a long way before the last pairing got in.
Yeah, well, I must confess, I went to a show last night, and so I watched the
which show
in a pub. It was like a little sort of theatre comedy review thing.
Okay, oh. Good.
So I was in the pub watching it, and Molinari posted, and then the last hour's
play. Was it good, the show?
It was good, but I was on my phone looking at the leaderboard.
Ah.
Because I actually had money on Molinari last week, so I was counting my winnings.
The scheduling of this show, then, is pretty bad if you've got a significant wager on it.
It was like at school listening to the cricket.
Had you promised to take somebody there, and that's so you were sort of strapped into it, you couldn't get out of it?
Just there with a friend. No.
I mean, it's a great performance. I thought Matt Fitzpatrick was going to win. I thought he was playing very well. It would have been great to see him win a first PGA Tour event. Because a friend of the show, great player, led going into the final round, wasn't convinced about Rory, seemed to do not a lot wrong, Matt.
No, I mean, he's picked up second place check, and is he going to play more in the States? I don't know. He might do.
Rory McIlroy looked as though
Is that what you want to hear, or?
Well, I don't know.
Well, I don't know.
That's your reaction. I just wanted a little bit more on Fitzpatrick.
He's finished second on a golf course that was it wasn't a low-scoring week. It was a high-scoring week in terms of to par.
Yeah.
It wasn't so many...
major championship scoring week. Nearly.
They kept pushing that, but I wasn't having that. I wasn't having US Open conditions, not really. Greens were firm, but you know what? The greens should be firm every week. Firm greens, and then that means you've got to find the fairways to get it anywhere near the pins. That's the way to temper the scoring.
I'll tell you an interesting thing about Fitzpatrick. I was looking at his quotes after, I think, the third round, and all he was talking about was how he liked the course because it was almost impossible to hit in the rough and hit greens and score well. And then I actually went and looked at his stats, and he only hit four fairways in that round.
Going to say, last round he struggled a little. Well, I say struggled, he was just an nth off.
But that's the strange... Golfers often seem to say this. They'll say, on the one hand, you can't hit in the rough because you can't hit the greens. And then actually...
You do. He scored very well, didn't he? He scored very well. But if you want to make... let's see how many fairways that Francesco here. I would think quite a few on that final day to shoot, 64 did he have? 8 under?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He beat Rory's score from last year by one, didn't he?
You just can't get it anywhere near those pins from the rough. And it doesn't matter if it's, you know, a couple of inches high or 4 inches thick. It doesn't matter.
I want to get your thoughts on Rory in just a second. But first of all, we're going to hear from him. It looked as if he was going to successfully defend his title, but a final round, level par 72, saw him finish in a tie for sixth.
Tough day. You know, it was tough to get it close to the hole. I felt like I really didn't play that badly. I missed a couple of shots. I felt like I was hitting good shots to 30 feet all day, and it's hard to sort of shoot a score. I mean, my mindset going out was play that way, take care of the par fives. You know, I thought, you know, go out there, do that, shoot 68, I would have been close, and obviously that was the winning total. I just didn't play the par fives well enough. Short little putt on four, you know, sort of missed it in the wrong spot on six. I had two great shots into 12 and wound up in a tough spot, so... You know, if I played the par fives a little better, it might have been a different story. But just so firm out there. I did everything I wanted to do. I hit fairways. I hit solid shots into greens. Just it's asking a lot of yourself to try and hold 25-footers all day to make birdies.
So Rory, in the final group once again, and failing to win since his last win. He's been in the final group 9 times, hasn't won.
Not good enough. Not for a guy like Rory.
Is this a thing?
It is a thing. Because when you're as good as he is, if you have had that many goes in the last group, you should be turning some of those, a percentage of those, into wins. So there is something going on. I don't know what it is, but I know he was defending champion at Bay Hill, but he spent a lot of last year with chances to get over the line, and he didn't. And for, you know, the world's top players, that's something they've got to do. Not every single time, that's not possible, but... A fair chunk of the time, if they're amongst the best in the world, they've got to close, and he hasn't been doing it.
There's been a lot of these stats about when he's in the final group, but I came up with one. It's now his last 10 times he's been second heading into a final round, and he's not converted the win. The last one was the DP World Tour Championship in 2015. And I think, actually, if it's not just when he's in second or whatever, it's actually just the business of winning. It's now, like, nearly 5 years since he won a major. That's like a long time for somebody as good as he is.
It is with what's around him, because now he's surrounded by the Dustin Johnsons and the Justin Thomases and the Rahms and all the other players, that there's not much to split them. There's not much between them all. They're all on their week going to be there or thereabouts in a major championship. It's, if anything, going to be harder now for Rory to win more majors. So he's got to start. The notion that you can just turn up and win the major, like you can pick it off the top of a shelf because it suits you, is a wrong one. He's got to start picking up wins wherever he's playing and then get to the major championships and just play them like a normal week.
One little thing that we might be overlooking, I think we're probably fair to say that there is, at the moment, a bit of a problem, but you could almost say that it might well be that when one win comes, they'll come in a bit of a clatter.
Rory's always been streaky.
Yeah.
Always.
But not only with that being with Rory, but also there'd be a little element of regression to mean. The fact that he hasn't converted all these chances means that, you know, the chances are that when one comes, they'll come quite quickly. But he's got to start doing that quickly.
Yeah, I think he's, you know, it's a juxtaposition, really. You want to be immediate and do it now, but you also know that being impatient isn't the way to get it done. So you're in one place where you want to execute and finish and just put that all to bed, and yet you know if you try and push it unnaturally, it isn't going to happen. So he's got to sort of ride that fine edge that you have to stay on top of to win a golf tournament. And then I think you're right. I think once he wins one, I think that he'll dispel the doubts and then go on a Rory run. We know he can go on a Rory run. He could win three majors in a row.
Minus 2.08 strokes gained putting on his final round. Only three players were worse yesterday.
That's not good. And if you don't putt well in the final round, you're just not going to win. You've got to play well, but you've also got to putt well. You've only got to look at Molinari, who won with the best putting round of his life.
Good performances as well from Tommy Fleetwood, Rafa Cabrera-Bello and Matt Wallace. Tommy probably thought he should have won, leading as he did going into Saturday. Rafa was leading after day one. I guess we'll have different opinions on those two. Matt Wallace as well. Tommy Fleetwood, first of all. Matt, your thoughts on his performance?
He's had a recent record of being a bit weird when he has a 36-hole lead. I think that's the third time on the trot that he's not just had a poor... Well, he's not had a moving day in the sense of moving forward. He's moved quite a long way backwards. I think that might be a bit of a fluke that he's had three of those on the trot. But
he said that he's close and proven by his performance over the first two rounds. It's there. Tommy's game is there, so I expect to see him win pretty soon. I mean, Tommy Fleetwood might win this week in Sawgrass.
Got the British Masters hosted by Tommy Fleetwood coming up pretty soon.
Northwest coast of the country, yeah.
Could that be the one? What about Rafa?
Interesting character, flushes it. And he's another one.
Is he due a win in the States?
The big thing with him is he's around the greens.
He doesn't get as many wins as he should. And Rafa is aware of that. He's aware of his lack of Ws on his personal achievements.
He goes through
graph.
It though, doesn't he? He needed to hole out on the last, didn't he, to get to 12 and put it in the hazard. I mean, he doesn't back away. He doesn't think about the money, does he? He's going for those wins.
I think Rafa's a super consistent player. I think if he spent 1 hour less in the gym and 1 hour more on the chipping and putting green, he might do better.
I think that about myself sometimes.
Well, it doesn't show, though. See, Rafa, I can see he's been in the gym with you. Understandably, you're feeling like you don't want to put off your studio guests. You don't want to wear any revealing tight. You know, why wear a large when you can buy a medium? That's the sort of clothing that you wear. But you've got some heavy-duty clothing on top of that. I can see that. Underneath, bulging and rippling. Rafa style.
Matt Wallace... What do we make of his performance? I mean, we talked about Justin Harding and his rise off lesser tours, shall we say. I mean, Matt Wallace, his trajectory is continuing to go onwards and upwards, isn't
it? Yeah, looked very comfortable. It looks like he enjoyed his performance at Bay Hill. He is going to do well wherever he goes, Matt Wallace. He's going to play wherever he goes. Playing for the win, which I love, that's the way he's going to continue playing.
Could he pick up a PJ Tour win this year if he plays in enough sort of rank and file events?
You know? I think he's got the potential. What I like about him is I chatted to somebody last year who said he owns the space he's in and he's very good at sort of projecting the notion. And I think he's not necessarily doing it to other people as much as to himself. A bit like Poulter in that respect, that he knows he can win and he's very much telling the world that when I'm in contention, I will win. And
actually, that's his messaging, definitely. Yeah.
And strangely, he doesn't win quite as often as he likes to project the idea that he does. But he remembers the good stuff. He's very good at that.
Oh, I don't know. I think he's won an amazing amount of times, Matt Wallace.
Oh, he definitely has won a lot.
Yeah.
But if you talk to him, he's never been close and not won. When in actual fact, he has done. So, for instance, the Italian Open before he won.
Oh, you mean he's closed out all the opportunities he's had?
Yeah. In his head, when you talk to him, he's closed everything out.
But he hasn't.
Yeah. And that's not a criticism. I actually think that's very smart play from his. He's taking good lessons from when he doesn't win, but he's actually then telling himself, oh, I've won all the time.
Would he be good to listen to mic'd up with his caddy?
Yes, I think it would be quite good, actually. I think I'd put Dave McNealy and Matt Wallace together with a live microphone. Definitely.
Also, the Arnold Palmer event. No Americans finished in the top five since the 2010 Open at St Andrews. Thoughts on that? Is this just a situation where there are more European players, more worldwide players playing on the PGA Tour, playing more regular tour events? It's just inevitable, is it?
If it happened 5 weeks in a row, I'd start to think it's something. But it's just the way it worked out this week.
I think that's a good point from Rob. I don't think that it signals a big change. But I think you would have to be honest and say it's been quite common that Europeans have done quite well in this. Not necessarily winning it, but they've Graham McDowell's done very well. I remember Eduardo Molinari came from nowhere and finished second.
Jason Day Any thoughts on the Australian withdrew after six holes because of a back problem? Is he a doubt for the Masters? What was that surprise? I mean, I actually thought he was 100% fit because he's had issues, hasn't he, over the last year or two? And you hear
he's always injured, Jason.
Yeah, he seems to be.
Yeah, he's always hampered with niggles, or remember he had that balance thing going on, yeah. And he couldn't get his equilibrium when he was looking at the
vertigo.
Golf ball. Yeah, vertigo or form of it, whatever he had, and muscle injuries. He's always got niggles going on. Some players, the body you're given, you're just more robust than others. It's just the way it is. It's just the luck of the draw when you come out that egg.
Still 11th in the world, Jason Day.
Yeah, his withdrawal last week caused quite a fuss on social media because fantasy golf is a huge subject in America, and they were getting very angry about his consistent withdrawals. Mm.
It's like when you're playing fantasy football. Don't put any Man City players in there because you don't know who Pep is going to pick. You put in Raheem Sterling, you might leave him out, and have Sane playing. You think, how can you leave Sterling out? Very difficult. So maybe the fantasy golf in America are thinking Jason Day risk.
Leave him out is the word.
When Jason Day is on, you know, when Jason Day got to the world number one position, the way he was playing at the time, it looked like he would take some shifting. That was the feeling at the time. He was churning out, week in, week out, playing some unbelievable golf, and it looked like Jason Day was there to stay for some time. But it doesn't matter who you are, unless you're Tiger Woods. He just skews all the numbers. Forget him. Everyone else who gets to world number one, you're there for a finite time, because once you fall off that pedestal, just a little, someone else is going to come surging through.
Day also actually said at the Open, I think, last year, that the business of getting to number one in the world, actually, once he got there, he realised what an effort it was. And actually, the only way was down then. He was quite exhausted mentally and physically.
Yeah, staying there is a lot harder than getting there for those that make it, which excludes us three.
On to this week's event next, the inaugural Magical Kenya. In fact, I've missed out the top 10 in the world. Rob, give us the top 10 in the world.
And that was very apropos, considering our discussion over the previous 5 minutes.
Yeah. There is a plan to the way I run things.
There is a plan, but you're not on it.
It's not just the randomness of your shows.
Okay.
You know.
So I like random. Yeah. This isn't random, though. This is the top 10 in the order that they lie, starting with the world number one, Dustin Johnson. World number two, Justin Rose. In three, Brooks Koepka. In four, Justin Thomas. Number five is Bryson DeChambeau. They are as they were, as is Rory McIlroy in six. Then there's a change because Francesco Molinari goes from 10 to 7. Xander Schauffele remains at 8. Ricky Fowler drops to 9 from 7th. And John Rahm rounds out the top 10.
On to this week's event.
Plenty of European interest in there, Dan.
On to this week's event next, the inaugural Magical Kenya Open presented by ABSA, the first time that a European Tour event has been staged in the African country, although we have had Challenge Tour events previously. We're at the Karen Country Club in Nairobi, par 71, 6,922 yards, opened in 1937.
At altitude.
It says here, Rob, what do you know of the venue? Have you played the Kenya Open?
I finished second. I lost in the playoff to Mike Miller in the Kenya Open.
Oh.
Yeah, I think that was 1996. I think that was.
What was Edinburgh Jimmy's final words to you?
He wasn't
on that?
No, he wasn't there. No.
So hang on, change your caddy. You should have won.
Well, I nearly won.
Change your caddy. You should have won. Why didn't you tell anyone at the start of the week?
I had to go back to school.
Yeah.
I cricked my neck and didn't make the cut in the school. And when you missed the cut in the school, even though you fell off the tour, you had no ranking on the Challenge Tour. I didn't have a ranking. Alan de Soltra gave me an invite to the Kenya Open and I lost in the playoff. And that then got me a few more tournaments. And then I won and then I was away. That was fine.
Did you crick your neck in the gym?
No, just woke up sometimes, head in the wrong position. Wake up and it's stiff as a board, and you can't. You either can't turn going back or you can't turn going through, depending on which side you do. It was one of those.
The worst thing to do sometimes.
Trust me, the worst place to do it is at the tour school because that's your whole year gone.
Matt, what do you know of the course? It's been used quite a bit, hasn't it, on the Challenge Tour?
Yeah, and it's not that much of a surprise that South Africans have done well there. Because, as Rob mentioned, altitude, traditional design.
Grainy greens,
Kikuyu fairways. It's a bit breezy. It's very like Johannesburg.
And yeah, and you've got the distance the ball goes. They're kind of used to it. So
yeah.
It's a lot of stuff built in there for South African players.
There's actually been quite a long-term sort of link between the Johannesburg Open and this. People who've done quite well in the first have gone on and started quite nicely when this was a Challenge Tour event.
But now it carries, of course, the weight of the exemptions that you get on the European Tour. So for players, perhaps in a weaker field, They'll see this as a massive opportunity.
Hayden Porteous, Eduardo Molinari have both won at the course. What does the field look like here, Rob? Because they've got that exemption, maybe better than it might have been. The likes of Shubhanka Sharma, Renato Paratori, Thomas Bjorn's playing this week.
Thomas Bjorn is making the journey from the western tip of Europe all the way down to Cairn Golf Club. So, yeah, it's obviously there's a lot of players from Kenya, a lot of African players and a lot of African amateurs, which is good. That's what they should do. They'll get some big-time experience playing with some of the players that ply their trade on the European Tour week in, week out. Eric van Rooyen's going to play. Played well last week, the South African. You mentioned Jacques Kruijswijk a little bit earlier on. He's playing. Bezuidenhout finished second. He's playing. Gonzalo Fernandez-Castaña, Hayden Porteous. Big, big contingent from South Africa.
Any further thoughts before we get some selections here, Matt? Anything you want to add about the Kenya Open?
I do know a nice little story about this event, and that is, over the last sort of 10 years, the European Tour, the Challenge Tour and the European Tour Caddies Association have done a lot of work with a charity that works with street children in Mombasa, and they have helped them get work caddying at a country club called Vipingo Ridge. This place is called Glad's House, and six or seven of the caddies every year that have learned their trade at Vipingo Ridge have then gone to the Challenge Tour event and they've worked for players. Chris Lloyd, do you remember Bristol?
Yes.
Bristol bass player? He's become very involved in the charity, gone and seen the work they do.
Very good.
Fantastic stuff.
Yeah, excellent.
But think, Marco Itten, not many of us will know him. He's a Challenge Tour player, finished second in Ireland last year. He's got one of their caddies on his bag this week. So keep an eye out.
Keep an eye on, definitely. And one of the players that I've been contractually obliged to mention is Ho-Sung Choi. It says in brackets here, mad swing.
Yeah, the swing is...
He just sort of lifts
unique.
Off a bit, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's got a kind of... It's pretty normal, to be honest. From the ball to the top of the swing, back to the ball, it's all...
It's the follow-through,
It's the weird stuff that goes on. Pirouetting after the shot. But it's all after the Lord Mayor's show.
Yeah. But he's not the worst player, is he? He's not there just...
He's no youngster, though. He's in his 40s
he's
now.
He's not there just as a sort of freak show thing, is he?
Well, he won in Japan last year.
Yeah.
And he knows what he's doing. It's actually not his swing, but his putting I quite like. He's quite
has
theatrical.
He got a trickle? Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. When he can spot
one. Well, you're a bit
one
of a lovey, aren't you? I mean, we found out you're in a pub the other night. Last night you're in a pub looking
in a
at,
pub.
Well, a small comedy show. I mean, that could have been anything. Burlesque, probably. I would have thought.
Nothing funny about burlesque.
You take it seriously, do you?
Yeah, I try to.
Oh, there you go.
Let's get some predictions, shall we? Who wants to go first? Rob Lee, you've been so bad this year.
Okay. Now, I'm going to play against myself here from this seat, of course. I'm going to now win this side some points because they're lacking badly. They're so far behind.
Hang on a second. I've just been told that it's actually the other way around.
No.
You're going to play.
I'm going to win points for my opposition this week.
No, that's not how it works. You are actually playing for Rob Lee, Esquire.
I'm playing for the presenters, am I?
Yes.
Oh, excellent.
And I'm playing for the co-presenter.
Okay. I'm going to go with Christian Bezuidenhout and the aforementioned Eric van Rooyen, who both played well last week. They're both South Africans. They can both excel on grainy greens. Those are my picks.
Will it be a case of Von Ryan's Express?
Only if he wins quickly.
What if it happens if he gets shot in the back when he tries to get on the train? Right,
I always
the
thought Frank was going to make
so
it, didn't
did I.
you?
Every
I thought
single
Frank,
time.
Frank is going to make
Frank.
This. Grab
go
his
on,
hand! Grab his hand!
Why didn't they slow down
for him? Why didn't they grab his hand?
He single-handedly led them out of
got
that prison
them all
camp.
Out
got
the
them
tunnel
all out,
and everything.
All the way through Italy, the lot.
Relayed the track,
right
the whole
to Switzerland,
thing.
Everything.
I mean, Frank had to make that.
Bang out of order.
Yeah.
Matt, who are you going for?
I am going for Shubhanka Sharma. He won last year in Johannesburg. And then he thrived at the WGC in Mexico, both of those altitude, both tree-lined. I quite fancy that. And also Romain Langasque, he was second in the South African Open in Joburg
right.
at
That's
the end
right.
of last year. He was second on this course in 2016, and he's made five of six cuts this year.
Terrific. I'm going to go for...
So you should finish first and second, if there's any justice.
Yeah.
So what's left for you,
there's
Dan?
No justice.
What's left for you?
There's just us. I'm going to go for Justin Harding.
2 weeks in a row?
He's done it before.
Okay.
You know, he's got form-ish.
But statistically, and I know you're into your stats, it's rare.
Yeah. I know, but he's done it.
So you've gone for something rare when actually what you like to do is play the numbers.
Yeah, well, yeah, but he's
so
done it
before. So you're going against your...
If he hadn't have done it before, I wouldn't have done it.
You're going against what you would normally do.
Played the course before. And my other pick is...
How can it be more interesting than that?
Is the man who likes to give everyone the red card, Jeff Winter.
Because he's Danish.
Because he's Danish. Top 15's coming into this in Oman
will
and Qatar.
Will he be top Dane, though? Thomas Bjorn's going across
I think he'll beat Thomas Bjorn. In fact, I'll have a match bet with
Thomas
you each or two. No problem about
recently.
That.
Don't worry
13th,
about that.
Karen, back in 2015, so that's my two selections.
I bet you Thomas makes more.
Makes more what?
At the end of the week.
At the end of the week? Makes more shots?
Folding.
What, than Jeff Winter?
Yeah.
We can have a even fiver on that one.
Okay.
That is your lot. We'll have a full review of matters in Kenya next week. Plus, we'll also look ahead to the Maybank Championship in Malaysia. Until then, you can stay up to date with the latest news from the European Tour via the website, as well as Twitter, Facebook, Snapchat and Instagram. But for now, from Matt Cooper.
Goodbye.
From Mr. Robert Lee.
Just to remind you, Van Rooyen, his express... and Bezadenhout.
And from myself, Dan Roebuck. It is goodbye. We'll speak next time.